Tapes, I mean a library of tapes, and you know, you just can't hear them all, but we heard portions of an awful lot of tapes. And some way or other, when they came to this here fellow's tape that's going to lead this here meeting, maybe stop. And we heard the complete tape. There's about three or four of them that night that we heard the complete tape. We brought them back down to this here area, and our coordinators went through these here tapes. And we all came to the very same conclusion. Not any one of these speakers would have been a good speaker for tonight's meeting. But we all came to the same conclusion. We wanted to meet this fellow from Massachusetts, John Vaccaro. John? Thank you. Where I come from in Berlin, Mass, they call me John the Indian. I really don't believe that's the reason why I am an alcoholic, although I still have a reservation. I think for any of us who have been fortunate enough to have spent some time in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, one cannot help but to have received many rewards in life. And I would have never would have believed that someday I would be given a reward in reality for being what I am. When being what I am, I have spent so many years so light about. Someone once said that one must have a purpose in life. One must have also a direction for his life. But before you can have these things, you must first of all become responsible for your own footsteps. Another rewarding experience for me is to have been given in AA a type of a state of mind that I have received me that allows me to look back into my own life. And when I do so, I can see so much today that I know I have passed by for many years. Not too long ago, this afternoon, about 2 or 3 hours ago, I was out with my friend Pete from Welland, Ontario, and he took us out for a little ride, and on our way back, he says to me, "It's a quite a privilege, isn't it, to be asked to speak in the Founders' Day?" Then he says, "Not everybody receives that honor." And I cannot help but to look back in my own life. Tonight I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in Syracuse, New York, some 20 years ago. At this time, I have spent 7 years in Skid Row. I have spent 4 years in lumber camp washing dishes and 3 years and a half in the Canadian Army where I washed more damn dishes. A man that I have met in Tupper Lake, New York, another Indian guy from my reservation in Canada, where I have never met him before, but he drank with my father, and he says that I looked like my father. So he brought me to his home that night and met his wife. The next day I left, and I became an alcoholic, and he wound up in the Salvation Army in Syracuse, New York. And started to attend AA meetings, and about a month later, he found out that I was sober in rescue mission in Syracuse, New York. So he came to see me one night, and he asked me if I wished to attend an AA meeting. I said no, because like many of us, I have never connected my problem with alcoholism. Although I was sitting there, I had a long hair, my face was covered with wine sores, I was dirty. And I was supposed to pay a 35 cents a night in rescue mission, and I was behind 3 weeks' rent. But I didn't know that I was an alcoholic. So I said to me, "Well, you can get coffee and donuts, and they're free." So I said, "Let's go." And that's how I attend an AA meeting. Now, I would have never believed if someone had told me that night, you know, that if I should stay sober, that Jim from Akron, Ohio, in June of 1977 would ask me to speak on a Saturday night. Here I was, you know, I'd been away from my reservation since at the age of 14. My father died drunk. I'm in lumber camp washing dishes for 4 years and 3 years and a half in Canadian Army. I take a drink and I live in the Skid Row for 7 years. Never been married, never owned a car. I cannot read and write. I'm sitting there with wine sores and long hair. Can you imagine if someone came to me and said, "John, if you stay sober, one day you'll speak in a somber seat." And so I am a grateful alcoholic. The psalm kind of touched me this evening as I was sitting in the back. My mind brought me back to my own reservations when I was young. Like I said, my father died an alcoholic. And 5 years later, 8 members of my family passed away. They all died with TB. And when I was 13 years old, my mother was dying. And I was afraid. Sometimes, middle of the night, because I was sleeping with her, I said to her one night, one morning, "You think that I'm going to die too?" She said, "No." She said, "You're different. You're strong." And she said, "I'm always very proud of you because you never cry." And for some unknown reason, that thought came to my mind tonight, probably because here I was sitting there, and I am intelligent enough to know that there are a few thousand people here among us, or perhaps psychiatrists, doctors, businessmen, priests. And I cannot help but to think that now I am 50 years old, and I still have not gone to school. I don't know any big words, although I was talking to somebody this afternoon and he said one big word and I memorized it, because I believe when you speak to audience such as this, at least you can use one big word. We're talking about alcoholism and he said it's insidious. So I said yes and I walked away from him, because when I don't understand anybody, I don't hang around too much. When my mother died, there was no home for me in reservation, because my people felt that I too had TB. Not knowing it then, that since I have recovered in the program, I know that in those days people were afraid when you had TB. So I lived in an old empty house for 1 year with a dog. Indians in reservation talked about lumber camps in Patton, Maine. So I decided to leave. I grabbed a freight, and sometimes later I arrived in CC camp in Patton, Maine, where I walked 23 miles in the woods. And a fellow by the name of Bill Langster gave me a job washing dishes. Well, I stayed for 4 years, and when I was at the age of 18, he called me one morning, and he says, "John, I wish you'd leave. The war is getting started, and you're living here with older people. It's not healthy. You should join with the younger people." And I felt that he was right. So I left the lumber camp, and I went across to Canada, to Quebec City, where I joined the Canadian infantry. And like I think most people, I think I had a vision of becoming a very important person in the Army. I always was a dreamer anyway. I remember when I lived in a reservation in that old empty house, I always daydreamed, and I always felt that one day I will have a nice home, and I will have a nice job, have nice clothes. maybe a car, and a nice girl. And I wouldn't have to feel the way I do, this feeling of being rejected and being lonely and not being able to belong in life. And I felt that if I could have these things, I would feel different inside. And I guess joining the Canadian Army, my idea of what I should be didn't really change. But because I have no education and couldn't read and write, I couldn't go on training, so the Army gave me a job washing dishes. And in my recovery in the program, among many things I have been able to identify about myself is that I have problem accepting the truth. I have a way of twisting around, put a handle on it, and hit myself on the head. Washing dishes for me was something that I didn't look forward to and something that I didn't welcome because I felt that made me little less than other younger people. So I didn't do or couldn't do what my boss suggested to join the younger people. I was ashamed of it. I have never taken the pass to go home because I didn't want my people to know that I was washing dishes in the Canadian Army. I never even went out with a girl. And I was old enough to know that I should go out with a girl. Not everything you learn in school. They say, God moves in mysterious ways. When I was 21 years old, I got my discharge and went in the bar room or a nightclub with a friend, and I took a drink. And I look back tonight on my first drink because a lot of things happen. And I think I don't have to tell you that when we drink, inside we change. And when I drank, I felt good because alcohol numbs or kills all these feelings that robs me any time I am sober. When I drank, I could sit down to a person that I have never met before, to the next table, and start communicating, start talking, and I have this feeling inside that I was making a good sense. Where before, I would never be able to talk to anybody because I have always had a very unhealthy attitude about myself. I have always felt that other people were better than I was. I was always ashamed that I didn't talk with English and I didn't have no education. And when I drank, this feeling left me. I remember I went out with a girl the first night I got drunk. And I didn't get up in the morning and say, Christ, this will kill me. I said, thank God, I am 21 years old and first time in my life I have been able to appreciate my God-given desires. They have been one of my greatest enemies. Now, I'm not saying that I am an alcoholic because I was born in reservation, because my father was drunk, or because I couldn't read and write, or because I was bashful. I am saying that in the early days when I drank, alcohol was a friend because it allowed me to do what my boss said I should, join the younger people. But because I am an alcoholic, and because I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and because I have been taught something about the nature of my sickness, I take a second look tonight, and I examine what else happened tonight I took my first drink. If you have came to me that night and tell me, John, if you continue on drinking, you will live in the skid row for 7 years, I would have never believed you because alcohol was a friend. It makes me feel good. But my education in AA has taught me that, while on one hand, that booze gave me a freedom that I had never had before, on the other, it started to rob me. I was just as much as alcoholic the night I took my first drink as I was when I arrived in AA at the age of 29 after living in Skid Row. I am as much as alcoholic now, 52 years of age, 20 years of sobriety, as I was when I took my first drink. The difference is the progression. The question of progression. I have never been a social drinker. The fact that I didn't get drunk and fall down didn't mean anything because I was young and I was strong and those couldn't put me down. But 2 years later, I walk up in sidewalk, and for the next 7 years, I lived in the skid row. And in those 7 years, I tried to stop drinking because, like I say, I've always wanted to be somebody else. I've always wanted a nice job and nice clothes and nice girl and nice car. And I would stop drinking. The guys in the skid, the boys in the skid row, they used to tell me, "John, why don't you take a place? You look sick." And when boys in the skid tell you, "You look sick," you're sick. So, one of the boys says to me, "Why don't you see a priest and take a place like I did?" And I said to him, "It really works, doesn't it?" He said, "Yes." So I went to see a priest, and I was so sick that I told him that I wished to take a place for 1 year. And I guess the way I smelled didn't help any. He says to me, "Why don't you take it for 30 days, and if you are less to be successful, to come back." But I listened to a speaker one night. He said he took a place, and he lasted 300 yards. And I can identify with that. And Tom in Rescue Mission, he is not a fellow who always tried to save me. He claimed that once I have saved his life, and I have never told him otherwise. He calls me to his office very early one morning, and he says to me, "John, there's a fellow by the name of Billy Green coming to this city in War Memorial. That this man has helped an awful lot of people. I want you to go and listen to him every night," he says, "and he will help you." And I went to the War Memorial in Syracuse, and I listened to Billy Green for 28 nights, and I was sober. Oftentimes, I said, if Billy Green stayed for the whole year, I would have been sober for the whole year. But he left, and I got drunk. And Judge Darcy, a week later, gives me 6 months in Jimmyville. And I said, that's the last time I'm going to listen to Billy Green. One night, I was sober in Rescue Mission again, attending the services because I wanted a bed, and that's one way of getting it. Put about 40 or 50 bums attending your services. A long, tall guy get up, and he says that for many years, he was a bum, just like us. Until one night, he accepted Christ as his personal Savior. He says, since then, his entire life has changed. He said he got married, got himself a nice job, he bought a new station wagon. And of course, I'm sitting there with wine sores and long hair, and I'm dirty. But he touched me because I've always felt if you can get these things, you'll be all right. And then he says, any of you boys can do the same thing. All you have to do is move forward and accept Christ as your personal Savior. I thought, well, that wasn't so hard to do. And I get up and I move forward. And I kneel down, and I didn't know anything about Christ, you know, he was talking about. Nobody ever taught me to know anything about Christ. The 4 years I spent in lumber camp, I used to listen to lumberjacks talking about him. And by the time they finished with him, you wouldn't believe him either. Somewhere in a big book, he talks about a man who drowns and he grabs a straw. I guess a fellow says, hope against hope. I kneel down, and this guy was sincere. He kneeled down next to me. He says to me, "Son, you're safe. Well, you should see me the next morning. I'm facing a judge. And he has my record because I have faced this man about 43 times. And he didn't look to me like if I was safe." He says to me, "Don't you know Fayette Park here in the city? It's for the decent people to go there on Sundays. And not for bums like you." He says, your Indians are all alike. He says, you come to this city, you get a job for 1 week, you get drunk. He said, look at your record. You always get into fights. All you want to do is fight. Then he took his glasses off, and when Judge Dorsey takes his glasses off, you've had it. He gave me 6 months in Juniper. And I said to myself, this guy, he don't like Indians. Because he was bald-headed. I figured maybe my great-grandfather got to him first before I did. And so by the time I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I really didn't have too much faith or confidence on any respect. I often said, if anybody asked me anything about AA, I would have told lies. I remember once in my life, I would suffer a little bit for the truth, because although I have never went to school, in my reservation I was taught that the truth is the only honorable thing in life, and there was no substitute. And I was intelligent enough to know that. And I think deep down inside, when I started telling lies about myself, in my sick mind, I knew that I was robbing myself from pride and respect and honor. But nobody asked me anything about me. I walked in through the doors of AA, and in Central Group in Syracuse, New York, there was a lawyer who was sober 13 years, and his job every Friday night was to shake hands to every man who walked in that room. And as I was walking through the doors of AA with my long hair and my wine sores and my dirty clothes, he spotted me, and he had this big smile. He rushed over and grabbed my hand with his two hands, and he said to me, I am so glad to see you. Have a coffee. And sit down in front. I had coffee and I sit down in front, and I listened to three speakers and could not identify. The language of sobriety completely escaped me. One of the speakers was a lady judge. Can you imagine me identifying with a lady judge? And it isn't that I have never met a judge before. But I have never met a judge who suggests that I should try to identify. So after the meeting, I was leaving, and this same lawyer, I always remember, he put his arms around me, and he says to me, I want you to meet some of my friends. And the only thing that I can tell you about that meeting was that people in AA worked very hard, tried to convince me that I belonged here, and I knew it. You might say that what touched me in my first meeting was something much greater than the words could have given me about the nature of my sickness. Without question, one who lives in 5 years, he walks with plenty of evidence to convince anyone that I am the last person to take a drink. I think most of us who are sober in AA, regardless of who it might be, it seems that it is a type of a sickness that, while maybe it is true that you might be a lawyer and in your daily life you deal with evidence, you probably have piled up mountains of evidence, and nobody can convince you that you are an alcoholic. We get sober in AA and we look back, and most of us can say, my God, I was an alcoholic 10 years ago. Every once in a while, someone would say, my God, he lives in the Skid Row. You should know he's an alcoholic. I should have, but I have the same sickness as you are. And he tells me the same thing. I came back because I think what touched me was the understanding. I was hungry for that. I guess I have always was hungry for an understanding. And I was hungry for love. and acceptance. I came back. Somebody asked me the other night, John, what do you think that helped you the most in AA? I look back and I honestly say, what helped me the most? I came back. I came back to the people who understood me, who accepted me, who respected me, who loved me, when I myself would have told lies about myself for no reason at all. I came back to people who could teach me to understand that I am an alcoholic. I am powerless over one drink. I cannot take one drink in safety. I came back in the early days, it didn't make sense. I learned the words, but I didn't understand. It made me feel good to learn words like, it's a mental obsession that defeats the first drink. Never heard it before. The bumps that I walk with in streets, I have never heard one of them walk around saying, it's a mental obsession that defeats the first drink. Then I have learned another word, compulsion. Meant nothing to me. It took 2 years to pronounce it. I got a friend where I live, he said, I never knew what compulsion was. Every time I seen it a drink, I wanted it. I memorized the pre-album months and months before I knew what it meant. And it was a good feeling to sit there. And I have totally enjoyed the latest speaker this morning. Now that is an example of being sober for a long time. Of one who practices program. And I like the feeling that she had in her mind when she said she felt so good because nobody knew she was anonymous. I can understand that. Because I felt good sitting there when I listened to the chairman reading a pre-album. I didn't know what in the hell it meant, but I could memorize it. He is not aligned with any sex, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. I know the words, but I didn't know what in the hell it meant. When it came to a point where he says, hey, it doesn't mean, Alcoholics Anonymous, I forget what I was supposed to say. But I memorize it, like I memorize the Lord's Prayer. AA does not wish to engage in any controversy. Now, I figured that one out myself. I felt it meant that you can't go to bed with women anymore. And since that I have not been doing so well, it didn't bother me anyway. I met a sponsor. My sponsor was a man that I have known for a long time. Him and I used to meet in county jail in Syracuse, New York. He was a barber in jail, and I used to wash his floors. Pat was a man that you never trust, drunk or sober. You know, he would steal your shoes and sell them and buy your drink and say no hard feelings. And I had not seen Pat for some time, and I met him in Central Group in Syracuse, New York. He was all dressed up and with a very beautiful girl, and he had a new car. And he says to me, I'm your sponsor. He would pick me up in Rescue Mission and bring me a sandwich. Have a sandwich. And you know, it never ceased to amaze me, the quality of love and understanding and compassion that our maintaining steps in 11 steps talks about. You know, Pat would bring me have a sandwich because although that I had nothing, I am a type of person that if I thought for 1 minute that you were feeling sorry for me or trying to feed me, I would tell you, I don't need you. You know? And it was much years later before I realized, you know, Pat don't eat sandwiches. He would pick me up and give me half a sandwich and bring me to a meeting. About 6 months later, I was still in Rescue Mission. He stopped the car one night and he said, John, you're serious in this program. I want you to leave the Rescue Mission. You can't practice this program and live with those problems. But the only people I could identify or comfortable with was those people who sleep on the floor in rescue missions. I couldn't understand these people walking around talking about the mental obsession that precedes the first principle and all that jazz. And I didn't want it to leave, but I guess God was on his side because the rescue mission burned down one night. And I went to see Pat, and I said to him, "Rescue mission burned down," and he said, "That's the grace of God." And he brought me to the 12th step house in Syracuse, and he gave me a job where I was getting paid $7.50 a week and a lodging. And my job was to wax, wash, and wax floors, to make coffee, answering the telephone, and washing dishes. And one of my, I suppose you might call it a reward in my sobriety today, not only did I have learned to live like a white man, dollar down and dollar a week, me a dishwasher. I still like the feeling today. I press the button and it hums, and I said, "Hum, you cheap bastard." Thrown out in rescue mission by the old timers in AA. One night, a girl by the name of Ann called, and she wanted help. There were people who play cards every night in this club. I told them there was a girl who needed help. When I told them who she was, they told me that she's been around for a long time. All she does is use people in AA. I never understood the language then, even though I was sick, and I don't understand the language today. But I was young in AA. I like what Father Martin says, that a man is a rational man, must function with intellect first. And discipline is to be able to suffer because you know it's right. But I have always reacted first and feel sorry after. And when these old-timers didn't want to do what I felt they should do, I upset the table while they were playing cards, and I punched one of them right in his nose. And they threw me out. They threw me out, and but they were good enough to call Pat, and he came to see me as I was walking down in Fayette Street, very mad and no place to go. He brought me to his home, and the next day he brought me to Salvation Army, to Major Harvey. And Major Harvey gave me a job working on a truck in Salvation Army for $1 a week, where I worked 3.5 years. And then I started to travel. When I was sober 5 years, I was almost 35 years old. I was still living in Skid Row. I still couldn't read and write. I was still buying my clothes in Salvation Army. But you know, I can't remember ever missing one meeting. I've always came back. Even in my sick mind, for some unknown reason, I must have felt there is something here. Very seldom today I have ever missed a meeting. This is, you might say, a home away from home. 1 o'clock in the morning, I arrived in Marlboro, Mass. I was broke. I was sober 5 years. Intelligently, I had no plans of tomorrow. My reasoning didn't allow me to see that there was any life tomorrow. The past is still something that I'd rather tell lies about. And today, it really matters less for me whether I should turn to the left or to the right, because there was no meaning in either direction. I slept in a men's room in a hotel. morning, a couple of mornings later, I was having a lunch in the restaurant owned by the member of Alcoholics Anonymous, when the waiter asked me if I knew of any contractor in town that could remodel and paint your house. I said, yes, I do. Me. She said, I didn't know you were a contractor. I said, I didn't either. She said, would you come over and give me an estimate? I went over and I gave her an estimate to paint her house for $300, two coats, and I got a job. I went back to see Paul. I got a job because other contractors wanted $1,200 to $1,400. I went to see Paul and I said to him, I've got a job, but I don't have the money to start. He says to me, why don't you go back and see Rita? She might give you enough money to buy the material that you want. So I went back and I asked Rita if she could give me some money. She gave me $100. And I went to the store, and first thing, I bought a white coverall. I figured if you're going to be a president in your own company, you might as well buy a white coverall. And, you know, I bought white coveralls, and I bought some things, and a hammer, and a scraper, and drop cloths, and I carried everything to the job. Then May, I met a man who worked in the telephone company, and he let me borrow a 60-foot ladder, although it was against the rules. And with the friend, we delivered it to the job. And I got the 60-foot ladder up. And you know, this place is so big that I couldn't reach the peak. So I find some old lumber under the porch, and I carried it up there. And I built a scaffold right on top of the 60-foot ladder. And I started my business right close to heaven. And thank God, Paul owned the restaurant, I didn't start. I met a plumber in AA, and he says to me, John, I have a ranch house in Sudbury, Mass., which is only 7 miles. He said, all you need is a 10-foot stepladder. So I borrowed a 10-foot stepladder. I got all my crop plots together, my paint, and my white coveralls. I stood in the corner, and I stopped the bus. He stopped and he looked at my ladder, and he looked at me and he says, are you serious? And I said, I am serious. I am self-employed and I have no other means of getting to work. Yeah, you know, I think this guy must have been an alcoholic. You know, he says to me, if I give you a ride, which you promise you'll never do it again. Finished the job. My next house was the lady's school teacher. She is a very important part of my life. I said to her one night, she taught school for 40 years, and she told me, and retired. I said to her, do you think you could teach me how to read and write? You know, I'm 35 years old. She says to me, I have taught thousands of people how to read and write. And 3 months later, she helped me to memorize the 69 questions, and I passed. And here I was in my 5th year of sobriety. I was a president in my company, and I had a driving license. What was so special in this lady, and I think this is what education in the way of life teaches us, to be able to look back and to see so much that one passed by in life. Because whatever the ingredient that I needed to be able to see the truth wasn't there. I was leaving that lady, and I remember 12 o'clock at night, I went to see her because she was a friend. She had only one boyfriend in her life, and his name was John. Thank God for that. I remember about 12 o'clock as I was leaving, she's holding my hand, and, you know, she was very sincere. She said to me, John, I wish you would continue on your education. Your mind is so good, she said. Can you imagine, here I am, 35 years old. I've been away from my reservation since at the age of 14. Washed dishes 7 years and a half, 4 years in lumber camp, and 3 years and a half in Canadian Army. Lived in Skid Row for 7 years. Never been married. Never owned a car. And about a few weeks ago, or a month or so ago, I was sleeping in a men's room in a hotel. And this lady is trying to convince me that I have a great mind. What was it that young lady this morning said? The key that opens the door into this way of life is faith. Faith is believing. Faith is trust. But not as long as I'm thinking. Whatever I am, as an ingredient to deprive myself from the spirit of faith. I said, I don't want her to feel sorry for myself. I don't want her to feel sorry for me. That job, I'll do myself. Grew up for 7 years. Never been married. Never owned a car. And about a few weeks ago, a month or so ago, I was sleeping in a men's room in a hotel, and this lady is trying to convince me that I have a great mind. What was it that young lady this morning said? The key that opens the door into this way of life is faith. Faith is believing. Faith is trust. But not as long as I'm thinking. I use whatever I am as an ingredient to deprive myself from the spirit of faith. I said, I don't want her to feel sorry for myself. I don't want her to feel sorry for me. That job, I'll do myself. I didn't believe her. How could I? A couple of years ago, I was hired by the University of Maine to teach on the adult education program. I was paid $50 an hour. I was so impressed with what I said, I gave them half an hour free. But we go back to teachings of AA. A man's life comes by being responsible of his own footsteps. On my way home, I remember my dear friend. One night, when her and I stood at the door, holding my hands with his two hands and trying to convince me, John, your past is lousy, but your mind is okay. Please believe me, I stopped school for 40 years. But I couldn't believe. I couldn't believe because not too long ago, I slept in the men's room. I couldn't believe because I don't talk good English. I couldn't believe because I cannot read and write. I couldn't believe because I don't have a nice car, I don't have a nice home, I don't have a nice clothes, I don't have a nice girl. I couldn't believe. Strange it may seem that none of these things has to do with faith. It never ceased to amaze me, and I wish to say this because I think it's quite the same. If one of our wisest people, and they are many in this country, was chosen to select about 10 people and take 10 people to choose one person to help an alcoholic who are suffering in this country, so say a professor, maybe psychiatrist, bishop in priest and all that, you think three months later they would say, I know one guy is in the hospital in Akron, Ohio. Right now he's having DTs. Nobody trusts this man. He tells lies, he cheats, he does everything. But he is the man that we can help an alcoholic. I doubt very much if then great minds would come up to a man who was in a hospital. The question is, what is faith? And what are the ingredients in which are essential for man to learn to have faith? Faith is trust. Faith is a spirit of independence. No man can serve his God until such time. First, he accepts himself for what he is, for that which he must give to another as himself. And so I have learned a great deal by my dear friend, school teacher. But here I was. I was president in my own company, and I had a driving license. And Paul, who had owned a restaurant, came to see me where I work, and he said, he had 11 passengers station wagon, and he said, John, you can buy this car for $700 or $750. I said, I don't have any money. He said, ask the lady upstairs. She might give you enough money for the down payment. So I did. And she gave me enough money for a down payment, and here I was. I had a car. Then I said to myself, maybe I should find me a girlfriend. But I had these 4 feet in front missing. And I felt that you couldn't find a nice girl with 4 feet in front missing. That's the only thing I lost in drinking. And I must tell you how I lost it. In Syracuse, New York, there is a place called a slave market. I don't know if I could explain it to you. Somebody upstairs in there. This is a place where all the bums hang around, and somebody come over and give you a job for half a day and pays you. It's a place. That's where I live. And one day I got a job unloading a box car, bricks. And I unload the box car, and Saturday afternoon I get paid, and I started drinking. Also in Syracuse, New York, there is a barroom called Smitty's, where all the New York Indians drink in Smitty's. I am a Mi'kmaq Indian. I don't drink in Smitty's because Mi'kmaq and New York Indians don't communicate too well. But every once in a while, 20 of us Mi'kmaqs will get drunk, and we'll go to Smitty's, and we'll communicate. But I was feeling good, and I had leather gloves that I used unloading a boxcar, and I felt strong. But I had no intention of walking into Smitty's because I'm not that crazy. But as I was walking by, somebody opened the door and threw this guy out, and that's where I met Smiley. Smiley is a little Irishman with a degree, a very skinny guy. So I picked him right up, and I said to him, what the hell is wrong with you? He said, it's those Indians inside. Well, I said to him, well, they can't do that to you. And he said, no, they can't. So I said to him, what'd you say, you and I go in there and clean them up? And Smiley said to me, it's a good idea. And by the Jesus, it wasn't a good idea. In a general hospital, and I lost 4 feet, and Smiley sitting there without a scratch. And so I should have told him get lost then. But the years went by, and of course, I woke up in jail, and Smiley would always be there, and I would be all beat up. It dawned on me one morning, and I said to Smiley, how come that I can get so messed up and you never had a scratch? And Smiley has the most sincere look in the world, That's why he's such a good bum. He looks at me with sincerity. He said, John, don't you know, he said, I'm a college man. Yeah. And not knowing anything about college men, I felt if you go to school, you never fight. So I have this 4 feet in front missing, and well, I met a dentist in AA, and I've been watching him for about a month. I finally called him one night in a meeting, and I said to him, I have a little problem, and I wish if you could help me. He said, what's the problem? Well, I said, I'm looking for a girlfriend, but I have this 4 feet in front missing, and I was wondering if you couldn't put him back. And he gave me a card, and he says, make an appointment to my secretary. He was real nice. He was real nice. So I went over to him, and I said, oh, and he opened my mouth, and he started to whistle. This guy, he wanted to pull 14 teeth before he gave me four. And I said to him, you don't call this a bargain, do you? And you wouldn't give me a seat until he fills the rest of them. It took him 3 months. So, I can identify when people tell you get what you need and what you want. But I was very happy when I got my seat. I rush back to my room. I run upstairs. I look in the mirror, and I laugh for 2 hours. I'm still a product. I was over this meeting one night when I met a lady who run a paid house, home of an alcoholic woman. She says to me, "John, I'm told you have a car." I said, "Yeah, 11 passengers." She says, I run a paid house, home of an alcoholic woman, and I have 9 girls. I'm looking for someone to bring them to a meeting every Thursday night. Would you like the job?" I said, "I'll be very happy to." And that's where I met my wife, Kathy. I picked these girls up on Thursday night, and we bring them to a meeting. And on my way back, I said to her, "How about a date Sunday?" She said, "No." And like I told you, my biggest problem is I cannot accept the truth. I get hurt easily, and I don't suffer well. By this time, AA was working for me because on my way home, I said to myself, "Who in the hell she thinks she is?" You see, she lives in a trade house. She's got nothing. And here I am, I'm president in my own company. My own car, new set of teeth. Who the hell needs her anyway? So next Thursday night, I come along and I pick up the girls again, and on our way back, I said to her, "How about the show in Boston Sunday?" And she said, "Okay." So we went to show in Boston, and on our way back, I asked her to marry me. She said, "But I don't know you." And I said, "It's all right. We have 5 miles to go. We get a plane." So we get married. And we get married, and we stop the car on the street in Marlboro, and we count our change. We had $85. Didn't really know where to go. We decided that we go back to my reservation. I had been away for 21 years. And maybe I thought I missed something. It wasn't a very responsible decision, probably because I knew nothing about myself. Too much happened in my life that without the spiritual ingredients, without the spiritual support, a man's self-will and his emotions to destroy him from any comfort or any happiness in life. My childhood, it was something that took time and certainly a lot of friends in AA for me to even to look back and to understand. When my father died, we became very poor. And because, like my mother says, "I'm different and I'm strong," she would write a note to an Indian agent and wrap it around in my hands with a dirty old sweater, and I would walk 14 miles one way and come back. And in those years, I made many trips, but there was nothing to bring home. My brothers, I had twin brothers, used to cry all night. They went blind. Their bodies were covered with scabs. My mother used to say, "It's all right. We'll send John to an Indian agent. We'll get food." But even as I was young and sick, I knew that my mother was telling lies. But I think I also understand why. That there was no food. In those 5 years, I made many trips, and I watched my brothers and my sisters die, all 8 of them, in 5 years. When I was 13, my mother says to me, "One more trip. All I want is a jar of Vaseline." It was middle to winter. And she covered my hands with a dirty old sweater, with a note inside, walked 14 miles, and The man opened the door, and I gave him the note. And he gave me a smile. He threw it on the snow and shut the door in my face. So when we talk about growing, when we talk about believing that this program will teach you how to have control, teach you how to understand, and teach you how to love, I think we're talking about friends who will help you in the program. Kathy and I didn't stay too long. We had no reason to stay. We rushed back home. We arrived in Marlboro, Mass. We had $35 left. And we moved to a three-room apartment that we paid $13 a week. And when Kathy and I moved to a three-room apartment, the only thing that we had between the two of us was a coffee table that was given to us in a big house. And that's all. And even newlyweds cannot sleep in coffee tables. So Kathy and I, we slept on the floor. But you can have a lot of fun on the floor, too. One time I spoke in Westchester County in New York, and even an alcoholic, a witch over there. I never seen so many women wear so much jewelry. And while I was talking, I mentioned the fact that you can have a lot of fun on the floor. And after the meeting, this rich old lady said, "Young man," she said, "I don't know how much fun you can have on the floor," she says to me. "But I know you can have a lot of fun on the Oriental Rock." She identified, you know. Great sense of humor. That's almost as good as the lady who received a whistle from her daughter in case she got raped. But while we're laying on the floor, I said to my wife, Kathy, "I would like to have a boy, because I'm the only one left who can keep his name going." So Christmas came along, and my wife was in the hospital. And I went out and bought some feathers for the boy. My wife calls me, and she's crying. She said, "Honey, it's a girl." And I said, "You must be kidding." But she wasn't. Next Christmas came along. My wife was in there again. I received a call, and she's still crying. She said, "Honey, it's a girl." By this time, my experience is a great teacher. Besides, I knew that my wife loved me, and she really wanted to give me a boy. So I went over to see her, and I said to her, "Don't worry about it. Just have an open mind, and we'll try again." I learned that in the program. Next Christmas came along, and my wife was in the hospital again, and I received a call, and she's still crying. This time it's twin boys. I got scared. I went over and I said to her, "Honey, like you said, that next Christmas we hang our stockings and wait for Santa Claus." A couple of years later, the girl came along. And a couple of years later, another boy came along. So we now have six children. I guess that's what happens when you are both compulsive. This is my story in AA. I would have never believed that one day anybody would ask me to tell this story, when I know that there are so many people, so over 3 years, who are much better qualified and have a greater talent in choosing the right words and put them in its proper place. But it is the experience that I will never forget in my life. Jim said this is a special weekend for all of us here, and it is a very special experience for me and for my wife Kathy and for our six children. AA has been good to me. I was hired by the government to be a director for three reservations in the state of Maine at one time. I took off my coveralls and put on a tie. I walked into office with Ralph Al Carpet, and except my secretary, she looked like a brick house. And I said to myself, this is the way the white man lives for years. But now I am back remodeling and painting. In closing, I like to say that it is difficult sometimes for any man to do what is right, even though that he knows. And this has always been with me in the program. But I have also known that there is such thing as pride, there is such thing as honor, there is such thing as respect, and these reserved only to human beings. A man is only what he earns for himself. It is in theft, that it is in giving that one receives. It is true also that only that much that one gives to another, only that much that one will receive for himself. One of the most wonderful things about me that I can identify. Long time ago, I was listening to a judge in Syracuse, New York. On his talk, he recites the prayer of St. Francis in Love and Step. I never understood what it meant. 10 years or 8 years later, I heard the same man again. I connected two things. This time, I understood a little bit more what he said. Now that I look back in my own life, and I can see that my friend lawyer, who stood at the door when I walked in with long hair, with wine sores, dirty, when I couldn't pay 35 cents a night in rescue mission, he understood what St. Francis tried to say when he said, Lord, let me be the instrument of thy will, for where there is hate, I will bring love. Where there is sadness, I will bring joy. Where there is darkness, I will bring light. Where there is doubt, I will bring faith. I like the second part even more, because it fits me when I walk into AA. Lord, it says, I pray that I may understand rather than to be understood. He didn't say, John, I'm a very rich man in this city. I've been sober 13 years. I'm a lawyer. You listen to me, and you will be all right. No. He put his arms around me in my dirty old clothes, and he says to me, I am so glad to see you. And as I was leaving, when I was still lost, when I could not identify, he understood again. He put his arms around me this time. He says, I have friends that it can help you. It wasn't like a man who once says, the Fayette Park in Syracuse is for the decent people. He was a man who understood a bum like me. Because of this understanding and because of this love, I have been invited to come here. A lot of things in my life have changed. Christ, I even pay taxes. And it's not easy, especially when you know that this country was ours before it was yours. I spoke in New York one time in Ottawa, Ontario, and when I finished speaking, I introduced my wife to the audience. My wife, been sober 15 years. She said to me, John, I wish you'll never do that again. But I have a feeling that a man like me don't come back the second time to Hackin, Ohio. I speak with so many people. So I don't care what the hell she says. I want you to meet my wife. I just stand up wherever you are. Thank you very much.